presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
It has been serious around Dog Nation as of late. A lot of harsh tones about discipline and leadership and player arrest and things of that stripe. So we'll do our part here on Dog Nation Daily today to kind of veer in a more hopefully fun direction. Now I am going to talk about some of that stuff before the show is done today because I feel like you probably have to. But at least at the very beginning of the show, want to start off having what I think is a good bit of fun, because I think there is something to be said for Georgia fans maybe not always appreciating what you have. And I think we have an example of that when it comes to the venerable home of the Dogs itself, Sanford Stadium. Now, since Kirby Smart has been the coach of Georgia, one of the things that he is very good about doing is thanking the fans for the role that they play in making Sanford Stadium a really tough place for opponents to come to play. And I don't think there's any doubt that in this Kirby Smart era, big-time home games for Georgia have felt like big-time environments. Sanford Stadium, to me, has felt like a big-time venue. It's true in 2017. You remember after the game against Notre Dame, and Georgia played like the cupcake Sanford in between that, but it's the SEC opener, Jake Fromm's first SEC start against Mississippi State. Remember how loud it was that day? Remember how intense it was that day? Kind of a embodiment of what the 2017 season was like in a lot of those kinds of games, and Kirby Smart, after the game, did what he does frequently, which is thank the fans for the role they played and all that. Here's Kirby from way back then.
The atmosphere, I thought, was awesome. It's what the atmosphere is supposed to be in the SEC and college football. We had student section full, crowd made an impact on the game, had them jump off sides early, and I can't thank our fan base enough for coming out and supporting these guys.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's what Kirby Smart says, and I think that the way that he says that is the right way to say it. This is what the SEC is supposed to be like, and we're doing a good job of creating that here in Sanford Stadium. Wasn't just true in 2017. You could have said the same thing in 2018 as well. In fact, Kirby Smart did. Remember, near the end of the season, traditional rival Auburn, revenge game for Georgia, having lost to Auburn in its own stadium back at the end of the 2017 season. Great atmosphere, not only during the game while the Georgia crowd's making it tough on Auburn, but even before the game as well with the dog walk. And as Kirby explains, that kind of stuff has a way of just benefiting more than the actual opponent that you're playing. It can have reverberations for your program for a long time to come through recruiting. Here's Kirby on that subject as well.
I want to thank our fan base. You know, that was one of the most incredible dog walks I've ever been a part of. The environment tonight created pregame was electric. Probably has a lot to do with the fact we were playing a top 25 team, but we also had a night game. But you can't find a better place to play in college football. Our players love it. The coaches love it. Recruits love it.
So you may be wondering, why are we talking about this? What does this have to do with anything? Kirby complimenting Georgia fans and talking about how good the atmosphere has been for Georgia in some of these games over the last couple of years. The reason why I bring this up is because I happen to notice, somebody sent this to me on Twitter, USA Today has kind of a, I don't even know what you call it, sort of like a sports blog type thing called For the Win. And we are, as the young folks like to say, we are in the middle of bracket season right now, not just March Madness with the official NCAA tournament, but every website's got its kind of alternative bracket of favorite snack food, favorite cereal, favorite action movie, favorite blah, 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 blah. Well, For the Win USA Today has top sports stadiums, field of 64 bracket. Now, I don't quite know how to take this. This is partially good news, maybe partially not good news, depending on your perspective of Sanford Stadium. But if you're watching on video, we'll show you the full bracket here, and I'll need to be able to use this. So Georgia does make the field, and this is not a field of six. Yeah, it is. It's field of 64. Field of 32, excuse me. This is a field of 32 top stadiums in college football. You got a college, all of all sports. You got a college football bracket, an NFL bracket, a Major League Baseball bracket, and a basketball bracket, which includes some college basketball teams and some pro teams. So Georgia in the college football bracket is the number six seed. Georgia was a number six seed in this, which you may say is a little too low, but pretty impressive. It looks like Georgia has pulled the upset in round one, knocking off the Horseshoe. Ohio Stadium is the three seed. So Georgia now moves on to round two to take on the Big House at Michigan. So if you're curious here, and I'll try to do this really, really fast. The college football venues that make this, Tiger Stadium, known as Death Valley, Beaver Stadium, the place that Penn State plays, Rose Bowl, which is also the home for UCLA, Kyle Field for Texas A&M. I mentioned Ohio State and Georgia both in here, and then Michigan, and then Outson Stadium, the very loud ballpark where Oregon plays, makes this as well. Then the NFL places are pretty much what you'd expect. The major league places are pretty much what you'd expect. I don't know how Petco Park in San Diego is a one seed in this. I've not been to Petco Park. I've been to a lot of these other ballparks. Been to Wrigley, been to Fenway, been to did San Francisco not make this? I mean, San Francisco, yeah, okay, it does. San Francisco is probably the nicest ballpark in Major League Baseball. But nonetheless, Sanford Stadium is a six seed, and it upsets Ohio Stadium, the horseshoe, as the three seed, now moving on to round two. I'm assuming folks can go to For the Win and actually vote on this. Maybe we should put a link up for that. I don't mean to give USA Today more business, but maybe we can put up a link so people can go vote for Sanford Stadium to knock off the Big House. My guess is Michigan, just given the fame that stadium has, is probably a point spread favorite over Sanford Stadium in round two of the stadium bracket here. But nonetheless, my point in bringing all this up, though, is that it's not so much that I think the country sometimes doesn't give Sanford Stadium in Georgia enough credit. I would suggest that from time to time, maybe Georgia fans don't quite realize how cool of a venue Sanford Stadium really is. I think that Sanford Stadium, to me, has just about everything that a classic stadium venue is supposed to have. First of all, it's got a great nickname. All great stadiums have great nicknames. You got, the house that Ruth built. You got the friendly confines. Well, Sanford Stadium's nickname of Between the Hedges, everybody knows what that is. You hear that reference on ESPN all the time. That's a nationally known emblem associated with Georgia. That's a really good nickname. I think to be a great stadium, you got to have a great nickname. And I think that Georgia's got a really good nickname. I would also suggest to be a great stadium, you have to have some kind of nice view. It has to look a little different than other places do. And if you live in Georgia your whole life, you may not appreciate this, but one of the things I hear from outsiders all the time, people who come into Athens to come see a game that live in other places, that the terrain just doesn't look this way. When you look out across that west end zone over the bridge, which is also kind of a famous landmark kind of associated with the stadium, when you look over the bridge and you see those rolling hills, you see, that kind of view, that's kind of a distinctive topography, which is probably a bigger word than I should be using, but a distinctive topography that goes along with what Athens is all about. And I think that kind of adds to the ambiance that makes Sanford Stadium legitimately one of the best venues in all of college football. The other thing I'll add to this is, and the reason why I played the Kirby Smart audio off the top, is that I've been going to Georgia games for, I don't know, I'm 42 now. I guess I went to my first game when I was about 3. Started going regularly by the time I was 5 or 6. So I've been literally going to Georgia games for more than 30 years, 30 plus years. I've been going to Georgia games, for a long time. I think it is probably fair to say that in my era of attending games, late 80s, early 90s, I don't know that Georgia was always a really intimidating place to play. I don't know that you would have always said the UGA atmosphere is intense. Maybe those of you who are a little older than me that were going to the games during the Irk Russell era, which is a little bit predating me, or certainly the Herschel Walker era, you're going to say, well, back then, BA, you should have seen it back then. It was rocking and rolling. It was raucous. Maybe it was back then when Georgia was winning SEC championships 3 consecutive seasons. That's a little bit predating my memory. My memory is mid to late 80s, early 90s, heading into the start of the Mark Richt era, when I don't know this was always a really intense place to play. But I don't think you can say that as a problem anymore. I think when you look at what you see on the typical college Saturday now, Kirby references Mississippi State from 2017, Auburn from 2018. You can pick out really any of the big games that Georgia's played in the last few years. Crowd noise, no problem whatsoever. Crowd noise for Georgia fits right into the rest of the SEC discussion. So I don't know. I don't know what you do with this. Like I said, this is mostly just kind of fun to start off with here today. But I was kind of proud to see Georgia mentioned among some of these other top stadiums in college football. And I, for one, feel like Georgia and Sanford Stadium fits pretty well into that discussion. So we'll see how Georgia progresses in this For the Win USA Today bracket. But I guess just a way of reminding Georgia fans to actually appreciate the fact that every single fall Saturday when you go to Athens to Sanford Stadium, I think you're going to one of the best venues in all of college football. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us here in our own friendly confines of our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we are available as a podcast wherever podcasts can be found. The Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player, the worldfamousdognation.com. We try to make the show easy for you to find, and we've got even more ways for you to catch up with Dog Nation content coming up in the very near future. Stay tuned for a big announcement on that. Very soon, we've got some exciting stuff to unveil. I also want to get a little bit more serious now. We had some fun with Sanford Stadium off the top. We got to get into the discussion on spring practice here in a moment, because George is going to be back on the practice field today. I'll be in Athens a little bit later on. I think there's some key issues we got to examine just a bit as Georgia moves on to what I believe is spring practice number 4. Y'all correct my math on that, but I believe it's spring practice number 4. I'll also tell you a quick programming note. Normally on Tuesdays, Jeff Sintel here for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. Jeff had some personal business to take care of. Believe it or not, Jeff actually has a life away from the recruiting wars and the buildup for the 2020 class. So Jeff taking some time on that today. No Mr. Sintel today. We do have a very special guest filling in for Jeff on our show today. A guy that stood alongside him at the Atlanta opening regional qualifier on Sunday, where a lot of folks punched their ticket to the big recruiting event of the summer, and gave us some insight into how they feel about the recruiting process, including a couple names you've been looking to hear some more information on. Connor Riley was there with Jeff Sintel. A lot of you hear Connor as a part of our R.S. Andrews Cool Down after the show each day on Dog Nation Daily. So Connor going to fill in with Jeff and give us some insight from what he saw and heard from the Atlanta opening regional qualifier from this Sunday. Before we get to any of that, though, recruiting news, let me kind of get into some of the spring practice stuff, because I feel like there are right now a handful of open issues for Georgia going through the rest of practice and heading towards G-Day. And Kirby has given us some insight on that, and I think that we're going to look to get some additional insight on what I think are some pretty important issues facing Georgia that may not necessarily get the big headlines. If you watch TV, listen to the radio, kind of old school, classic media, some of this kind of stuff doesn't get talked about. But for Georgia fans, they are thinking a lot about some of this kind of stuff. One of those things in particular is the need to replace last year's terrific center, Lamont Gilliard, who put together a great Georgia career, became a really impressive mainstay of that offensive line, but as college players do, he has exhausted his eligibility, and now he moves on to the next phase of his life or the next level of play. That means that Georgia is looking for a new center. What I thought was interesting from Kirby Smart when he spoke last week was he came about as close as I think you're going to ever hear him endorsing a player in a competition. I'm not going to try to pretend to tell you that the center competition is over, but it's not like Kirby to say there's a leader. In this case, though, it certainly sounds like there is one. Here is what Kirby Smart said about one player in particular in that center competition.
Trey Hill played there against Kentucky. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind is here's a guy who played in a go-win-the-SEC-East type game against a really tough defense, and he was thrown and thrust right into the limelight. So we'll have a group by committee. We'll be working three guys there a lot of time. Clay will get some reps there. Jamari will get reps there. Trey will get reps there. We'll have a lot of guys working through there, but Trey's the guy that's kind of been walking through and taking the most reps, and he's gotten some experience already, which is valuable.
I mean, I think that's a really strong endorsement from Smart to Hill. I'm not necessarily surprised about it, but I do think that what Smart says about Hill there leads you to a couple of other questions. First of all, one of the names you don't hear mentioned there is Warren Erickson, and we'll kind of find out, I think, from Kirby more in the future about how Erickson fits into this competition, especially given the fact that many of us went into the spring believing that Clay Webb was hopeful of starting his Georgia career at guard and then maybe migrating to center later on. So there's some stuff to deal with there, but there's also what all this means for Jamari Salyer, who was a highly, highly touted and still is a highly regarded prospect from Georgia's 2018 class, and yet many people thought maybe center would be the eventual position that he landed on at Georgia. Of course, Trey Hill, because he played center with Jake Fromm there at Houston County, has always been in that discussion. But the rise of Hill in this position, what does that mean for Salyer, another greatly respected young offensive lineman in this program? Now, there's only room for five guys to play at once, and Georgia's got way more than five good offensive linemen right now. Salyer among them. But watching how the emergence potentially of Hill at center impacts Jamari Salyer, I think is also something worth watching here. Let me also mention this as well, another open position where competition's taking place. Georgia has lost a lot of wide receivers, Mecole Hardman, Terry Godwin, Riley Ridley, all on their way to the NFL, in particular on the inside there. What's next for Georgia, that slot receiver position? Kirby was asked about Kyaris Jackson, a guy going into his second year with the program and a guy that a lot of fans have high expectations for. What does Kirby think about Kyaris right now? Here's what he said on Tuesday.
It's going to be a common theme. You guys are going to ask me 1,000 times about the receivers over the next whatever number of days this is. I think Kyaris is a guy that's going to have to come out, compete. He's going to get plenty of opportunities because when you look at the production gone, who's going to replace that production? Well, the first in line are the guys that are here right now, not necessarily the three or four guys that are coming in. So I'm extremely excited about Kyaris's work ethic. He was a guy that was really in the year and then all of a sudden had a hamstring in camp and it kind of held him back. But I'm excited to see what he does. And there's a lot of other wideouts I could say, and hey, these guys are going to go out there and have, we're going to find out what they're about. We're going to see if they can go out and compete and go against the best and make plays.
So I think it's really interesting. Kirby gives you a lot there. I do think Kyaris is one of those guys that's just an interesting prospect. As I've said before, he's got a little bit more beef than you might think from a typical kind of inside receiver. I think you can use that to his advantage. The other thing that Kirby says, I think candidly, which is probably true, is that the guys who have been here do have a little bit of a leg up early on over guys who are coming in. Now, Kirby mentions the potential of three of those names. Obviously, one of those is the graduate transfer, Lawrence Cager. Kirby can't talk about him by name yet, but he's on his way. Then you got two freshmen as well, and George Pickens and Dominic Blaylock. So Kirby says, hey, maybe a little bit of an edge and advantage for the guys who've been through these rigors, been doing this, learning the way things go. The other guys got to get their sea legs under them just a bit. But that wide receiver competition, I think, is a lot of fun. I think I used the word fun specifically on purpose because ultimately I think the results of this are going to lead Georgia to have good receivers on the field. But the way all of this worked itself out during these spring practices, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. There's also more from spring practice I think that's worth paying attention to. I'm out of time for now, so let me push that to later on in the show. We'll deal with some more of that kind of stuff coming up. For now, though, it is a Tuesday. You've come to expect recruiting news here on Dog Nation Daily. I want to give that to you. No Jeff Sintel, but that won't stop us. Our buddy Connor Riley was with Jeff at the Atlanta event on Sunday. Big news here, including a heavy, heavyweight battle between Georgia and Clemson for a top-tier prospect. Let's talk all kinds of recruiting here on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So this is now for a guy that, for those of you that watch on video, you hear this voice a lot. For those of you who are radio listeners, podcast listeners, you don't hear it quite so much, but you see the name at DogNation.com all the time. Making his first appearance on the Dog Nation Daily proper, so to speak, the official broadcast of Dog Nation Daily is our buddy Connor Riley. Connor, thanks for pinch hitting for Jeff Sintel. We appreciate you being with us and hope you're doing well today.
Thanks, BA. Thanks for having me on, and just want to say I wish Jeff was here.
Well, I always wish Jeff was here. He's always doing a great job, but we know that you were doing a great job there as well. And I want to get some of the specific names that you had a chance to see on Sunday, some of the stuff that that you have going on there. But before we kind of get into that, just give me a little bit of an overview, because – I've not been to this particular event. Most people listening right now have not been to an Atlanta opening regional qualifier. That's a lot of words. Give us a little bit of an idea for what this event even is, and then we'll get to some of the individual guys who are there.
Yeah, so basically this is a mix of a combine, sort of, and then you do get – so you get a lot of guys working out together, you know, athletic testing. And then you also do get to see a lot of one-on-one reps, defensive linemen versus offensive linemen, linebackers versus running backs, wide receivers versus defensive backs, with some quarterbacks throwing to those guys as well. It's sort of a – it's not as big as it used to be. You know, all the top prospects used to come out for this because it was a way to get invited to the Nike opening up in when it used to be up in Beaverton, Oregon. Now it's a little bit of a smaller event. You know, Broderick Jones, 5-star Georgia offensive tackle, he wasn't there this weekend. You know, and it was just with a lot of stuff and track stuff going on, you know, there were a lot of guys who, you know, normally would have been there in years past, who just weren't there. But there was still a star-studded field with guys like Miles Murphy, Tate Ratledge, Arik Gilbert, just to name a few of the big-name stars that are all Georgia targets that were there.
Well, let's talk about some of those in particular. Let's talk about Tate Ratledge here for a moment. Jeff had a great piece with Ratledge at DogNation.com. There's also some terrific video. You can go to the Dog Nation YouTube page and see more of that. When Jeff's with us later on in the week, I want to talk to him about his insight on Ratledge, because I thought some of the quotes that he got from Ratledge were really interesting. And I guess there are two things to deal with here, Connor. First of all, there's this. It certainly seems like another example of Sam Pittman's relationship building efforts once again showing a lot of fruit. It certainly seems like Ratledge has had a very favorable impression of Sam Pittman, which is really good news. But I'm also interested in your evaluation of Ratledge as a player. You're watching these drills closely. If you're watching a video, you can see some of this on the screen right now. You know, I talked to you off air about this a little bit earlier in the week. It sounds like you came away from this event with a really strong opinion of who Ratledge is as a player. And I think that's an important thing to pair with the Ratledge's feelings about Georgia, which you can read at DogNation.com.
Yeah, Jeff, you know, wrote a long, lengthy article yesterday morning, and then we got a chance to talk to Ratledge after the event. You know, Sam Pittman has sort of done it again. You know, Clay Webb talked a lot about his relationship with him, and that was the biggest reason he ended up going and coming to Georgia, and I think it's going to be something similar along the lines with Ratledge. He really talked about with the sense of admiration in his voice for Pittman. And he also gave some praise to Kirby Smart. You know, there was a photo he tweeted out this weekend of him getting some one-on-one time with Kirby in the indoor facility. He really has a very strong relationship with Kirby Smart, both in terms of a football one, but also in terms of an off-field one. As far as an evaluation, have you ever seen the movie Roadhouse?
I have.
Ratledge was doing his best Patrick Swayze impersonation this weekend. He was just bodying guys. You know, you've got the video up right now.
Yeah.
Just throwing guys all over the field. And it's not like, you know, these are no-name guys. I mean, Andy Boykin is a four-star defensive tackle, one-time Auburn commit, someone who's between Auburn and Alabama right now, it sort of seems like. Ratledge just owns him. And he was a really impressive right tackle. He's continued to grow from when he first sort of came on the scene a few years ago. He's now listed at 6'7",
yeah,
310 pounds. He's someone who, you know, you don't want to put a lot of pressure on him, but it's easy to see if he comes to Georgia next year, he is someone who, if Isaiah Wilson were to leave, he is someone who could certainly be a candidate to come in at that right tackle spot and play right away.
Yeah, and I think that you use a really important word there when it comes to Ratledge, where – you know, Georgia just needs true tackles. It's one of the things that Jeff Sintel, I think, has done a really good job of chronicling over the last few months, that as much success as Georgia's had in recruiting overall, offensive line in particular, that doesn't mean that Georgia doesn't have some needs at the offensive tackle position. I think most of us expect Andrew Thomas to be gone from Georgia after this season, and it's certainly a possibility that the draft-eligible Isaiah Wilson at least could consider leaving after the 2019 season as well. Even if that doesn't happen, Georgia still has more interior than outside offensive linemen. And so for a guy like Ratledge, who based on the film that I'm seeing, looks like a tackle that was built in a factory, looks like it was actually, you know, designed by engineers to play the offensive tackle position, that makes, I think, him a really valuable commodity, I believe.
Yeah, and, you know, now that he's in that sort of 6'7 range, he's still got some – he can still put on some weight and get even bigger. But, you know – assuming Thomas does move on, which I'm pretty – if I were betting money on it, I'd bet good money on it just because he's projected to be a top 10, maybe even a top 5 pick next year. You know, Wilson, it's a little – you like to see a little bit more from him this year, but it's certainly a possibility Georgia fans have to consider. But based off what I saw and what Jeff Sintel saw on Sunday, if Georgia brings in Broderick Jones, who's top 20 overall player, and it brings in Ratledge, who's the number 52 player in the class and is probably going to climb based off of how he performed at the opening this week. He was the offensive line MVP for the event. Georgia fans should feel at least as comfortable as they can with these two guys as possible replacements.
I want to talk about Miles Murphy in a second. Let me do one more thing on Ratledge before we move on, though. Based on the whispers that you were hearing there, the chatter that was going on, how serious of a threat would a school like Tennessee be? Geographically, they're a little closer. Tennessee's had success recruiting offensive linemen, you know, two impressive five-star tackles signed for the 2019 class. Are the Vols a name that Georgia fans should take seriously when it comes to this competition for Tate Ratledge?
I don't know how seriously he should take them, but it's pretty clear Georgia's – I think safe to say it's the top right now. And then Tennessee, there's a little bit of a gap between them. And then you have schools like Alabama trying to get back into it. Because at one point they were considered a – a contender for him, but it's really Georgia. I would say Georgia at the top, and then Tennessee, maybe a step below them right now.
All right, so good stuff there. Let me move on to the Miles Murphy situation, and I tell this to Jeff Sintel all the time, and I think that you can't say this enough, that my favorite thing about Jeff is, and of course for those of you just joining us either on radio or video, Jeff had to take care of some personal business today. He's not with us today. Our buddy Connor Riley pinch hitting for him. Connor was with Jeff at the big recruiting event this past Sunday. But my favorite thing about Jeff is when there is good news to deliver involving Georgia recruiting, Jeff is the first guy there to put it up on a silver platter. He knows that Georgia fans are going to want to devour it. When there's the opposite kind of news, I think Jeff knows it's his duty to give it to us, you know, give it to us unfettered and unfiltered the way that it actually is. And I don't know, Connor, I read the thing with Miles Murphy yesterday, a player for the 2020 class that I think that Georgia really needs. I kind of come away from that piece at Dog Nation kind of feeling like this is more an example of the latter than the former. This is more of an example right now of you better be glad it's only March as opposed to, hey, it's only March. A lot of things can change. Right now, Georgia fans' time is actually on their side, knowing that it's going to take seemingly a lot to kind of, I don't know, get Georgia back in this discussion, heavy with Clemson, a little bit with Auburn. As of right now, I don't come away from this thing with Jeff Sintel thinking much more than right now. Georgia's a bronze medalist for Miles Murphy, and that's not exactly the news that I'm looking for when it comes to this player, who I think is just a crucial component of the ideal 2020 class of the Bulldogs.
Yeah, after Jeff and I talked with Murphy on Sunday, I said to him, BA's not going to like the news he just heard. Georgia has some work to do with Miles Murphy. I think, you know, based off of the comments he made, Georgia's behind Clemson right now. It's behind Auburn right now. Now, sort of laying out his thought process here, you know, based off of what he had said, he wants to go. Academics are going to be a factor for him. He really likes Clemson, their engineering program. Auburn has a strong engineering program. Georgia is trying to get that engineering program up and running. You see guys like Nolan Smith in there, Clay Webb in there. And one thing Murphy mentioned is, because he's been to a number of Georgia games, he was there for the Auburn game last year. One thing that he mentioned is the next time he comes to Georgia, which it might be for G-Day, it's unknown yet when that will be, he really wants to sink his teeth in, you know, the academics and where that'll sort of factor in with Georgia. But, you know, there's a long way to go in his recruitment still, but as you sort of alluded to off the top, you know, it's a good thing signing day isn't next week, because if it were, I don't think Georgia would be getting Murphy's services.
I mean, this is one of those moments where I have to be matter of fact about this. As well as Georgia's recruited, and I've been very happy with Trey Scott in particular. I think that, I mean, there's a lot to like about the names that he's added. I like the commitments from 2020, Jameel Burrows, Nazir Stackhouse. I like those guys a lot. I was thrilled with, you know, obviously Trayvon Walker. Who wouldn't be thrilled with that? But if Scott, who I'm going to presume is heavily involved in both these recruitments, if Georgia were to lose both Brian Brazee and an in-state guy like Miles Murphy, I don't even care if it's not a position of need, because right now I don't know that Mr. Murphy's really all that much of a position of need given the pass rushers that Georgia has in the program. But you can't lose Brazee and Murphy. I feel like at that point in time you'd have to criticize Georgia's effort on this, and you have to say that's a pretty big blight on the 2020 resume if you're losing those two, I think, future game wreckers on the front seven of a defense. If you were to lose both those guys to Clemson, I think that's a bad look for Georgia.
I'm going to push back on that just a little bit. I certainly understand where you're coming from, but I think Clemson, with just the number of defensive linemen they've developed in recent years, from guys like Shaq Lawson to guys like Christian Wilkins and Ceelan Farrell, who are going to be first-round draft picks in this year's draft, Clemson is a very attractive school for defensive line prospects. And, you know, as we've noted on the show before, Clemson has had no problem coming into the Atlanta area and going out and pulling top recruits out of the state. If there's one blight you want to put on Kirby Smart's recruiting resume, it's that he hasn't landed the best player in the state of Georgia yet in any of his recruiting classes. Now, he's recruited very well. He's signed multiple top five players from the state in each class. But that trophy fish, that 3,000-pound marlin, which Murphy would almost certainly qualify as, he hasn't gotten yet. But again, there's a long way to go with both Murphy and with Brazee. I think the thing to watch with Brazee is, does he come for G-Day? I think that's a very positive sign if it is. And I think the longer the Brazee recruitment goes on, I think the better that bodes for Georgia. And the same can be said for Murphy, because we know Clemson, they like to get their business done early. They like to get the recruiting done before the season starts at the end of August. The longer these recruitments drag out, and Murphy didn't sound too close to a decision at all. So the longer the Brazee and Murphy recruitments drag out, I think that's that bodes better for guys like Trey Scott and Kirby Smart to land these big fish.
All right, let's do some kind of stuff kind of quick here for a moment. I had a chance to see some of the video that y'all shot on Sunday of Arik Gilbert, the tight end from Marietta. So help me, if he got drafted in 2 weeks, I wouldn't – I mean, he just looks like a guy that's about to be in the NFL. He stands head and shoulders over other guys at the camp. I'm assuming in person he's as impressive as he is on film?
Yeah, he wasn't, you know, as big when I first saw him, but maybe that's just because I had spent all morning looking at guys like Miles Murphy and Tate Ratledge. But then when you see him compared to other wide receivers, he really just stands out. And, you know, he might not be that traditional tight end, but, man, Georgia can split him out wide, you know, move him around, sort of like how the Patriots used Rob Gronkowski, where they didn't always put him in line, they split him out wide and just made him a matchup nightmare. Arik Gilbert can absolutely be that. You know, there's Jeff Sintel has talked a little bit about, you know, the possibility of Gilbert and Darnell Washington, the five-star tight end prospect out of Las Vegas, playing together. And we raised that question with Gilbert, and he didn't, you know, he wasn't upset at the notion at all. You know, he knows that there's a very well-defined role where he can come to Georgia, be a pass catcher. I think that's the sort of best way to describe him. He's sort of in between the wide receiver and the tight end. But, you know, given his athleticism, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we saw him lined out wide a lot and just Georgia sort of use him as that in addition to flexing him in as a tight end.
That's really interesting. Let me stay with the same high school for a moment. Marietta with B.J. Ojulari. Obviously, Georgia fans like a lot about Azeez Ojulari, one of the 2018 signees there from the Blue Devils. Is it as simple as saying that B.J. is a clone of his brother, and because Georgia was as successful as it was recruiting Azeez, the recruitment for B.J. will be easy too? Is it that simple when it comes to Ojulari, Connor?
Yes and no. I got to spend some one-on-one time with Ojulari, and he stressed that playing time is something that he's looking at. And, you know, if you look at that outside linebacker position, there are a lot of guys there, including his brother, who I think has a very good chance of being a starter for Georgia in 2019. But, you know, BJ, he says his brother's on him a lot, both in terms of helping him figure out the recruiting process and possibly coming to Georgia. Azeez very much wants BJ there. As far as players, they're very different. You know, Azeez is more of a power guy, a guy who can move around, whereas B.J. Ojulari is pure speed. I mean, we saw him go against a guy we're going to talk about a little bit later here in Michael Morris, but he can get around that edge very quickly. He's got to put on a little bit of weight, but he is an incredible athlete coming from that edge rusher position. And, you know, Georgia's, they're certainly in it for him. I think it's similar to a Tate Ratledge and to an Arik Gilbert as well. It's a Georgia-Tennessee battle. Tennessee has sort of made a point to go after those big high school programs that produce a lot of recruits, guys like Marietta. They brought in Ramel Keaton last year. They have a commitment from Harrison Bailey this year. You know, they go after Grayson. They get Wanya Morris. They go after Camden County. You know, they got a guy like J.J. Peterson 2 years ago. That's sort of where they're going after their recruiting, and I think they're trying to build a pipeline to Marietta. So it's going to be on Georgia to really want to bring in a guy like B.J. Ojulari when they're not going to bring in a ton of outside linebackers and convince him to come to Georgia.
Let me squeeze in one more final one because you mentioned the name. That's Micah Morris. Now, on this program, I don't think we've hardly talked any 2021 recruiting yet. First of all, that sounds like flying car age, but it's really only one recruiting cycle away. But sounds like a young man. You mentioned Camden County, from Micah Morris, from down there in the Georgia coast at Camden County. Sounds like this 2021 offensive lineman made a bit of a name for himself this weekend too.
He is the next superstar offensive lineman. He is very young.
Wow.
I think he doesn't turn 16 until August. And you can kind of tell that he's still a little raw when it comes to, you know, the finer things of being an offensive lineman. But when he figures it out and puts it all together, and again, he's a guy who's already sung the praises of Sam Pittman. If he gets the right coaching, he is going to be an absolute monster at the next level. Someone who I 100% believe could come in, start right away as a true freshman if he continues to progress the way he has. I mean, we see him here going up against B.J. Ojulari. Ojulari is a year older than him, one of the top 100 players in the country, and Morris more than holds his own there. And, you know, the difference between Morris and Ratledge, Ratledge was doing a lot of his work at the right tackle position, which, you know, traditionally, you know, left tackle is a little bit more difficult of a position just given where guys line up. Morris more than held his own on Saturday, Sunday. One of the top players overall that we saw there, and someone who is going to continue to get better and better and going to be a major target for Georgia fans to know in the years to come.
I hope you'll follow Connor Riley's work at DogNation.com. Good Day UGA. He wakes you up every single morning with that at the website. Also look for those Around the Doghouse features, much the same way you hear us doing Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily. Connor does that for you at DogNation.com as well, and also a really good voice following the recruiting wars very, very closely. Connor, thanks for your time here today on Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate all the work you're doing behind the scenes every day for
thanks
us here
for
as well.
Me,
good stuff there from Connor Riley.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, really good stuff, really fun there. You know, I love getting these updates on some of these big names when it comes to recruiting. And, you know, when it comes to the Miles Murphy stuff, Connor jokes and says, oh, BA's not going to like this, and I don't. I mean, I have to admit that right now that Miles Murphy recruitment is not where I want it to be. But, listen, getting the news and getting the truth about where it is a very important thing. So glad to be able to get that from Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily today and on Jeff Centella, DogNation.com. So make sure you check out more from Jeff on that. We'll look forward to speaking to Jeff a little bit later on in the week. By the way, let me mention this for a moment. Speaking of, I guess in a weird way, recruiting, Georgia Tech offensive line coach, offensive coordinator, you know, a lot of titles, I guess, Brent Key, former Alabama assistant, had a tweet that he had to delete. We talked yesterday about Brandon Adams passing, the guy that has the same name as me, Georgia Tech player, shockingly passing away over the weekend. Just a devastating piece of news. And Key had a tweet that he deleted. I'm sure he almost feels terrible about, completely regrets. We do have the screen grab, though, because on the internet this stuff is forever. Key, what he tweeted, if in case you're curious, he says that Georgia Tech, as always, will continue to attract great men. Today we lost a great man, and we gained another great man. Even in dark days, the future is bright. So Key is referencing a recruit, the program guy, while also referencing the death of Adams. This is a disastrous tweet. It's been described as tone deaf over and over again. I guess my take on this may surprise some of you just a bit. I think when it comes to stuff like this, though, I think we would, as a society, do pretty well, and especially as kind of the subgroup, which is the college football community. Can we let a guy up off the mat on something like this? Do we have to just beat him to a pulp on Twitter to make ourselves feel better? Key misspoke. He said a bad thing. It is horrible to equate a death to a recruit. You can't tie those two things together. I think he knows that. I think that he probably just said the wrong thing. Saying the wrong thing is the kind of thing that happens in all walks of life all the time. And there's nobody would love to kind of poke at a Tech assistant, especially with all the, the boasting and the bragging that Jeff Collins has been doing. There's nobody that, there's no one that would like to poke at a Tech assistant, especially a former Alabama assistant, more so than me. But I'm also not for this gotcha culture where every time somebody does something wrong on Twitter, including something like this that is legitimately in poor taste, I'm just not for the pile-on on this. By the time that Deadspin gets involved, it's gone way too far for me. And I think the Deadspin's now captured this and kind of, gotten in all on it. And we can all feel better because we make somebody, feel really bad on the internet. But we are a part of real-life conversations where people say the wrong thing all the time and we just kind of move on. I'd like to see that exist on Twitter a bit more too, but nonetheless, bad day for Georgia Tech assistant Brent Key. Missouri is officially appealing its NCAA sanctions. You may have followed this story. They are right now facing a 2019 bowl ban because of a whole bunch of stuff that's gone on there in the past, and I guess just by virtue of the appeal, as long as they haven't heard the findings of this appeal, they don't have to sit out the 2019 postseason, which, if I'm Missouri, probably makes some sense. On paper, it's a pretty good team this year. It's a potential top 25 team with Kelly Bryant at quarterback and some of the other work that Missouri's done. So of all the years to not face a postseason ban, you'd probably rather not face one now than later. Almost certainly in the future, there's a chance that the Missouri team in the future has less talent. So even if you're just prolonging the inevitable, given this team this year, giving yourself a chance to be a part of the postseason, especially when Barry Odom seems to be building some momentum with that program, that would seem to be kind of a good thing. Will the NCAA reconsider its initial sanctions? I honestly don't know that. But if you can delay this in a roundabout way, that may actually end up being a win for the program, especially in this age of transfer portal stuff where a lot of guys may be looking to leave. And, of course, Odom's already talked very openly about what Jeremy Pruitt's trying to do, reaching there and grabbing some of his players. I guess there was even some stuff the other day. Michael Carvel was telling me that Alabama's kind of gotten involved on some of that kind of stuff as well. Kirby Smart has vowed to be hands-off, not going after any Missouri players. There's a couple I wouldn't mind having at Georgia. But nonetheless, that's what's kind of going on. Missouri going to appeal its sanctions. It may not get relief from those, but it may prolong this long enough to play in a bowl at the end of the season. I thought that Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated had an interesting profile of Felipe Franks, essentially casting him in a bit of a hero's role for Florida this year. If you're involved in the sports internet discussion, you may be familiar with the meme about Joe Flacco, the former Baltimore Ravens quarterback, and the question of whether or not he's elite. That's kind of one of those things that's been around the sporting internet world for quite some time. I'm starting to think there may be an SEC version of this conversation as well, and it's got nothing to do with the word elite. I think it's really funny to hear some Florida fans and Staples, the national writer, treat Felipe Franks as if he's good. Is Felipe Franks a good quarterback? And I know what you're going to say. B.A., you're a Gator hater. You're not qualified to even answer this question. That's fine. I'll step out and let other people answer this for a second. But looking at the stats here, this is the guy that's being treated as one of the reasons why Florida is going to be a top 10 team once again here in 2019. His completion percentage for a year ago, 58.4. His yards per attempt, 7.6. Touchdown to interception ratio, pretty good. 24 TDs, 6 picks. But I'm honestly not sure. Does that make him a good quarterback? Maybe it does. I'm not 100% sure on that. One more point that I want to get to, and we'll probably end up talking more about this on Dog Nation Daily tomorrow. I love when ESPN has its way too early top 25 and they look at specific issues facing those top 25 teams. Well, if you look at the top two teams in the way too early ESPN top 25, it's Alabama and Clemson. And the latest piece up at ESPN.com right now is, what's the most pivotal game for all these teams upcoming this season? Do you know that for both Alabama and Clemson, it's the same game? It's Texas A&M. And I was thinking before, Texas A&M also plays Georgia in November. There's a really good chance when the real poll comes out a little bit later on, you're going to have a chance of those three teams, Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia, being 1, 2, and 3 in the official AP preseason poll. How often has it been that a team, Texas A&M this year, will potentially play all three of the top three of the preseason AP top 25 in the same season? Now, Connor Riley pointed out to me before the show that that's not only true of Texas A&M. This year, it's also true of South Carolina as well, who even some Dog Nation Daily listeners have told me, you got to check that schedule, BA. That's a murderous schedule for the Gamecocks, and it is. So maybe this has happened more than I think it has, but a two SEC teams, South Carolina and Texas A&M, have a really strong chance of playing the preseason 1, 2, and 3 in the same season. I don't know what you do with that, but it's at least, it was interesting to me anyway. We'll make that your SEC through. Okay, I do want to mention one thing about the Tyler Simmons stuff, but I'll do that in just a minute, and the, you know, the ongoing Tyreek Stevenson situation. I'll do that in just a minute. Let me go back in time. You know, earlier in the show, we were talking about, as Georgia goes back to spring practice today, I was talking about some of the interesting issues that I think that Georgia's facing heading back to the practice field. We talked about Trey Hill and the fact that right now Kirby's coming about as close as you can to endorsing him as a center, not closing off that competition. There's still going to be some push coming from some of the other guys in that so-called committee, but Kirby had some nice things to say about Trey Hill. We talked about Kyaris Jackson, the role that he's going to play in that wide receiver competition. I think being back in the practice field today, in the brief window I get to watch those wide receivers, you better believe that's something I'm going to be looking at. One of the other things that Kirby Smart was asked last week, and we'll continue to examine this, and there's some really good stuff from both Mike and Chip up at DogNation.com on this, what's going on with the backup quarterback? There was a reporter on Tuesday that tried to get some of Kirby Smart's thinking, and as you're probably not surprised, Kirby pushed back on giving away too much. Here was that exchange.
You just talked about Jake. Could you tell me who's going to get the most reps behind him?
Yeah, the two quarterbacks are going to get reps behind him. DeJuan Mathis and Stetson Bennett are both going to get a ton of reps. To say most, I don't know that we could say most. They'll get the same amount behind him, but those two guys will be working, as well as John Setter, who's one of our walk-ons, that'll get reps as well.
So I think this is an interesting issue, probably not as interesting as Justin Fields a year ago, because Fields brought a good degree of celebrity status with him into the program. But Mathis and Bennett are so different that the competition between the two, I think, is going to be pretty fun to watch. Mathis is obviously a really impressive-looking athlete. He looks the part, but maybe needs to learn some of the extra facets of playing the quarterback position. Bennett may be just the opposite. He doesn't necessarily look the part because he's not very tall, but when it comes to playing quarterback, Georgia's played who've seen him in practice do it say this guy can get the job done. So the contrast between Bennett and Mathis I think is really interesting, and Georgia needs a backup, hopefully not for a lot of games, but maybe for the occasional spell here and there. And that battle between Bennett and Mathis, well, I think will certainly be worth watching. All right, so I tried to prolong this as long as I could, but I do want to say one thing when it comes to what you've seen emerge over the last couple days with this so-called chaotic scene in the Athens bar that led Tyreek Stevenson and Tyler Simmons both facing these disorderly conduct charges. I have a couple confessions to make on this, and I'm not quite sure where this is going to land with everybody, but it's something that I want to mention nonetheless. I'm just not really that scandalized by this based on what we know on this subject right now. Now, maybe we may hear more details later on. Maybe we may find out that some Georgia players acted violently towards some civilians. At that point in time, I'd be kind of turned off by that. But just on the basis of this right now, this is not yet enough for me to be scandalized. I think there's something to be said for not always caring about what everyone else is concerned about. There are going to be plenty of people in the national media who are going to tell you, oh, Georgia fans, you got to worry about what's going on in your program. You got to worry about Kirby Smart's leadership. But I don't necessarily think that you do. I mean, if we want to live in the real world here before, I mean, I've been with friends in downtown Athens. I've seen them get in trouble with the law for minor things that they've probably forgotten about. Now, does that make them bad people? That's the same thing about the Georgia players who kind of got mixed up on Saturday night. When I was 18 years old, I got taken to jail. I got a ticket for going 101 miles an hour in a 65 mile per hour zone. They put me in handcuffs and not handcuffs, but they put me in the back of a police car and took me to jail. I mean, you know, listen, growing up, there's a lot of that kind of stuff that's going on. We may find out more details that make this a bigger deal, but for me right now, I'm just not that scandalized by it. Maybe I should be. We'll find out. The one thing I can't have, though, is my players going to the emergency room for what happened there. That's the one thing that apparently happened to Tyler Simmons that I'd rather not have had take place. Nonetheless, 878 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. It's our Gatorhead Updater. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.